You see, most gamblers, when they go to gamble, they go to win. When we go to gamble, we go to lose. Even when we win, it's just a matter of time before we give it all back.
This is the Bet Slippin' Podcast,
featuring Jeff Clark and Eston McLaren from USA Today Sportsbook Wire.
I bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
No way.
Join them on their journey as they grow from gambling writers to sports betting sharps.
I mean, it's the gambling business. Occasionally get punched in the face.
You're listening to the Bet Slippin' Podcast. Now, Jeff Clark and Eston McLaren.
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
Yo. Welcome back to the Bet Slippin' Podcast presented by SportsbookWire.com. I'm a Sportsbook Wire handicapper and producer, Jeff Clark, one of the co-hosts here at the Bet Slippin' Podcast. And I'm joined by my gambling consigliere, handicap and hype man, colleague, fellow handicapper and producer, Eston McLaren. Eston, what's up, brother?
Jeff, we had a couple days getting recovered from Super Bowl 55, and boy, we needed some time to recover, but hey, we're back on the upswing now.
Yeah, I'm really licking my wounds. Holy smokes, did I take a beating in the Super Bowl. We'll talk a little bit about the bets in the Super Bowl. Actually, we can talk about the bets right now for the Super Bowl, because obviously that's the most important story and gambling stuff to discuss. The best part about my Super Bowl, or the only winning part about my Super Bowl, was I did cash my best bet. Unfortunately, that was in the NBA and had nothing to do with the NFL. I went 0-for-5 in the NFL in the Super Bowl, and it was brutal. It was a brutal Sunday, Super Bowl Sunday for me. But how did it turn out for you? Do you have any positives or good stories?
Yeah, you know, one of the main rules in finances in general is you got to diversify, right? So you did that by turning to the NBA, and I did that. I managed to, you know, break even a little bit by hitting a nice couple of player props. A main one for me was Rob Gronkowski first touchdown. Last show I was on here touting, I expected a big game from Gronk, and boy, did he deliver. Yeah, it's good to have something in common with Patrick Mahomes, and that's that you and I and he, all three of us, we're very let down by his offensive line, because not much else I'm ever going to have in common with that man, but I have that.
Yeah, like him, I feel like I couldn't step up in the pocket and make any throws against that pass rush. Outside of me losing money, which is a bummer, it was like that type of performance from the Bucks just makes me feel better about the NFL moving forward. Defense can still win championships. It doesn't matter the officiating or the officiating is an issue in another sense, but it doesn't really matter the trends of the league per se and how offense friendly it's become, because if you hit the quarterback in the mouth for 60 minutes, no quarterback, regardless of the arm talent, is immune to that. And like Patrick Mahomes was getting hit in the mouth and really didn't even play bad. He didn't make a lot of like poor throws. Like he kind of did the best of what he had. The player, his receivers let him down a couple times. And, you know, it was just a perfect defensive scheme meets just depleted KC offensive line. And that's what we saw. And that's what we got.
And there are so many times, well, everyone's seen that stat going around this week, I'm sure, about the 490 rushing yards he had going backwards and sideways in that game. And there were so many times at the end of those scramble runs, just running for his life runs. Can't even call them scrambles. That's too much credit to the offensive line. But, you know, just running around like a chicken with his head cut off, somehow he's up a pass, hits his receiver in the hands, and it's a drop. Like, just the poor guy let down all over the board. And, you know, we've gone a few minutes into this show. All credit due to Tom Brady. And, you know, that was the thing going into this game. All playoffs, really, anytime you picked another team, it was, oh, you're betting against Tom Brady. Why would you do that? It's crazy. Well, no, it was betting against the Bucks. And, you know, the rest of that team deserves a pile of credit for what they did in that game. Obviously, Tom had a fantastic game, the rightful MVP, the obvious MVP. that's another Super Bowl bet I had that saved my neck a little bit. That was my hedge, was, you know, pile on all these picks, all these bets of the Chiefs. Tom Brady sitting there plus 200 MVP. So yeah, you put a little bit on that, and that's going to recoup most of the losses on a Chiefs bet.
Yeah, we talked about this off air a couple weeks back after we did the conference title game preview podcast, and we were talking about Aaron Rodgers versus Tom Brady, and you summed it up perfectly when you said you took Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, and you said that you're going with the recency bias with Rodgers, who'd won the MVP. We'll talk about that here in a minute, over the history bias with Tom Brady. And that's a great way to put it. It ended up biting you in the butt in that one. But I pretty much made the exact same play and calculation in the next game. Like a lot of the schnooks that lost money with the Chiefs. And, you know, that's pretty much what had happened. And there was no offensive line injury or any momentum from the Tampa Bay Bucks that was going to get me off that pick. It was just a matter of how much money I was going to lose the Super Bowl, really.
Yep. Yeah, that's a good thing about the player props and, you know, about the NBA slate that day as well. You had other options that you didn't have to go all in on the Super Bowl. Luckily, neither of us did, and hopefully listeners didn't as well. So,
that'd
be a lesson coming out of a game like that, is have other options to fall back on and recoup some money, if not, still be able to turn a profit on Super Bowl Sunday.
Right. Yeah, I was able to turn a profit on the Super Bowl Sunday, but that's because I put a whole bunch of money into the Sacramento Kings. And that's how sports betting is done. I don't know if that's how you win, but those are the edges you can find. Sometimes it's not with the favorites, and you gotta plug your nose and just make a gamble. You know, any Kelsey cash props, you know, in the Super Bowl, but any other Chiefs prop is essentially a loser, you know.
Yep.
And every Chiefs tight end, touchdown prop was a loser, which is a crazy thought. It's
no kidding. Yeah.
You know, like, it's if you bet on the Chiefs in any which way except for over Travis Kelsey catches or yards, you lost money. Crazy, yep. Huh?
And hey, I hit a golf winner last week as well. Brooks Koepka plus 5,000 for the Waste Management Phoenix Open. That was decided right before the Super Bowl, so, you know, it was all gravy from there. Unfortunately, there wasn't a whole lot of gravy, but like I said, the Gronk prop went on, and yeah, it was still a positive day, and that's always the main thing you can hope for. So we're gonna talk a little more about golf coming up in future episodes of this show, but want to let you know that I'm not a big fat phony coming in. I will have one winner on my slate, at least when we do start golf talk more properly.
Yeah, and you made a point, you just said something that reminded me. We are going to move this podcast to Tuesdays. So expect the Bet Slipping podcast to hit your feed Tuesday evening. Obviously, there's no NFL to talk about or football to talk about, so we'll be covering cover more NBA. March Madness is around the corner. Esten is heavy into golf handicaps. You can check out all of his golf handicaps at sportsbookwire.usatoday.com. So we'll also bringing those awesome posts and handicaps to podcast form. That's how we're going to keep this rolling in the episodes that we're producing when football season isn't around. So just a little heads up, and I'll probably mention that again before we get out of here, but let me set the table a little bit for this episode, or for the rest of this episode, before Essen and I start eating. First, we're going to do a little kangaroo court with our NFL 2020 futures and award predictions. If you thought the NFL was ugly for your boys, the futures were a little rough too. We do have, I guess, a couple winners there, but it's just a nice, fun conversation that we'll be able to talk about. We'll talk about, obviously, the surprising outcomes with Offensive Rookie of the Year, MVP. And then we're going to talk a little scope and futures, or do a scope and futures segment. I have a couple NBA plays, futures that I like. Esten, I think, has a hockey one. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
So we'll do a couple hockey, and then we'll get out of here with our best bets going to the window, which most likely is just, or is pretty much going to be the futures segment, just buttoned up a little bit. And I do have one NBA gamer that I'm going to give out in the go into the window for later this week. Is that, that made sense, right? How I explained that stuff?
Yep.
All right. So let's break into our NFL futures and awards little spreadsheet we have here that we jotted down all of our in which we jotted down all of our futures and NFL predictions and our preview extravaganza episode way back in the end of August, early, I think it was the beginning of September. So we'll just start at the top. None of us had Tampa Bay Buccaneers, obviously, to win the Super Bowl. I'm trying to pull those stats now, but what we did have, I had the Seahawks at plus 1,400. Obviously, they got bounced out in the opening round against the Los Angeles Rams. And Essen chased the value to the max by taking the Atlanta Falcons at plus 5,000. Gives you a little insight to his future strategy, which you'll probably hear more of, but hopefully it's a little more profitable. You have any?
It can't. It cannot be less profitable.
Yeah. Well, the good thing is you were able to rip up that ticket early in the season and not have to worry some or harp on it so much.
Didn't sweat it one bit, Jeff. It was breathing easy over here.
Yeah. We both cashed our one seeds prop. We both had the, well, in the AFC, Chiefs were plus 300 to be the one seed in the AFC. Me and you both hit that. I had the AFC Chiefs to win the AFC prop at plus 270, which was tied with the Ravens, who is what, or that's who you took to win the AFC again, plus 270. Obviously, I won that one. You lost that one. The NFC, we talked about that. Those were our Super Bowl winners. Going down the list here, AFC North was my biggest, like, I think it's my biggest long shot victory here, the little futures that we did. I took the Steelers at plus 320. You took the Ravens at minus 200. Ravens had a rolling this season, but they got they had a little speed bump with COVID and cost them that one Steelers game, and that ended up being like one of the main differentiators or tiebreakers in the season for the AFC North. Do you have any thoughts about this as we're moving through? Not to put you on the spot, but
About that one in particular, yeah. Like Ravens, and well, the Ravens were the better team, right? Like they're the team that won a playoff game. You know, they were forced into starting Robert Griffin III and playing Trace McSorley for a good chunk of that game. And you know what? Tough to be a division winner when you do that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the Ravens crushed the Steelers in the stats in both games that they played, and yeah, they looked like an AFC favorite juggernaut entering the playoffs, where the Steelers were almost essentially limping into the playoffs. But
yeah, I can't think of a team in recent memory anyway that entered the playoffs in as bad a shape as the Pittsburgh Steelers, at least as a division winner. Like, obviously, the Washington football team wasn't a good football team last year, so maybe they debunked that point a little bit. But as far as division winners go, tough to think of one that looked as bad as it did when the playoffs started compared to how they looked when they were 7-0.
Yeah, Pittsburgh got carried by its defense early, and you know they have great coaching and savvy with Tomlin and Big Ben. But yeah, they'd be kind of, everyone considered them the worst like division winner outside the NFC East heading into the playoffs, despite them starting out, I think 11-0, right?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Even Washington, you know, as bad as they were, as bad as the NFC East was, they probably entered the playoffs looking like a better team. They beat Pittsburgh late in the season, right? So yeah, it was ugly, and you know, big offseason in Pittsburgh, and convincing Ben Roethlisberger to do the right thing and retire is first and foremost order of business.
All right, well, Well, let me cheer you up a little bit because we got three straight winners of the AFC division futures picks for you here, Eston. AFC South, you cashed the Titans at plus 165. Good job on you. I had the Texans at plus 325. That was another one that I could have ripped up pretty easily or pretty quickly.
Yeah.
The next one was the AFC East, Buffalo Bills. You took them at plus 125. I took the Patriots at plus 130. Given the Patriots' stats on year-end stats, I would say they actually overperformed their stats. But, man, what a great bet by you taking the Bills plus 125. They were the second best team in the AFC by record, and then getting into the AFC conference title game. Bills were the team that, like, essentially made my 2020, which is kind of crazy considering I didn't even take them to win the AFC East. When the season ended, including the playoffs, Eston, I was 11-1 betting Buffalo Bills games.
Wow. Good. Well done. You should have bet more.
I should have at least taken them to win the AFC East, which you did at plus 125. Hey, well, I'm a slow learner. What can you do? AFC West, we both cashed this one. It's a measly payout, though. Kansas City Chiefs were minus 455 to win the AFC West. That probably wasn't big enough favorites because there was just never a chance they weren't winning that division. There's not much to talk about there. AFC wild cards. I had the Titans at minus 139. I lose because they won the division. You had the Texans plus 150. A loser for you.
That's because they suck.
Yeah. But you had the Browns plus 125.
Yep.
Good stuff. Nice. Yeah. I don't know. Do you have, or does, excuse me, not you, our sponsor, BetMGM, do you know if they have NFL division futures up for next year?
No, not yet. Just Super Bowl 56 and conference betting so far.
So you got the Browns to win the wild card at plus 125. I wonder how it's ordered in terms of favorites in the AFC North next year. You got to think it's going to go 1 Ravens, 2 Browns, 3 Steelers, right? Or no? Do you think Steelers have more of an edge over the yeah,
Ravens, Browns, Steelers? Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking, right?
To me, that's if Roethlisberger comes back. If Roethlisberger doesn't, maybe even put the Bengals ahead of the Steelers have a good defense. Yeah. Yeah, that's probably it with or without Roethlisberger.
I mean, I'm okay to put the Bengals ahead of Steelers in terms of future projections if Big Ben doesn't play another year, and if Joe Burrow doesn't or if he's going to make a full recovery prior to the season kickoff, I guess that I'm just preemptively making excuses for the other wild card loser that I had, which was the Bengals at plus 700. Actually, real quick, something that I'm unclear about here, and maybe we're not going to get to the bottom of this, but I had the Ravens. I cashed this ticket, Ravens minus 834 or 834 to be a wild card. I don't lose that because they didn't win. Those odds factored in the division as well, right?
It depends, because BetMGM before the season, they had to make the playoffs or to specifically be a wild card team.
Okay, so that's what it was, right?
And I don't know. I didn't read up at the time, or at least don't remember. I don't know if they made the playoffs as a division winner and if, like, how that would have worked. But yeah, I mean, you had them as wild card in that one. But yeah, the Titans, you had Titans for wild card. And they won the division. So I don't know. Like, if that minus 139 was just to make the playoffs, which that's probably too high for that bet. So, yeah, you probably had them for the specific wild card berth. I'm not sure. I have to wait for those odds to come out this year and make sure you read the fine print.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to email our BetMGM guy or gal, because yeah, it just doesn't. It's a little unclear to me. Sorry about bringing more questions than answers to this podcast, though, listeners. because I mean, your three wild cards: Texans loser, Browns winner, Steelers loser in a sense, but it was -115. Again, if they factor in winning the division and making the playoffs and being at least a wild card, then you would have cast two out of three your wild cards. Whereas I only would have gotten the one with the Ravens at -834. Oh my God. Anyways,
a win's a win.
Yeah. Going to the NFC, we got NFC North, which was my, I picked the Lions at +600. Way off on that one. You had the Vikings at +160. Not nearly as bad as maybe my Lions pick, but neither one of us had a chance.
No. The Vikings, I had my hopes up probably around week 10. I thought they were going to make a comeback, maybe not win the division, but at least get into the playoffs. And yeah, no, not so much.
NFC South, you went with the Falcons through and through there, so you lose that. I took the Saints at -120. We both whiffed on the NFC East. I took the Eagles. You had the Cowboys, who, I don't know, Washington, go figure, right? They're definitely, yeah. Not definitely, but I'm pretty sure they were the had the lowest odds of winning the division.
Yeah. Yeah, I would imagine. And yeah, Eagles, Cowboys. No, one team fired their coach. The other one probably should have as well. And no, we'll see.
And NFC West, I cashed with the Seahawks at +210. You lost with the Niners at -105. Seahawks jumped out to an undefeated record, I think 5-0 in the first five games. And then Rams ended up overtaking them in the division. So did the Cardinals. But they ended up winning and cashing that ticket for me. Go Seahawks.
And do we learn anything from the Seahawks here? Like, as you said, started 5-0, looked like the best team, at least in the NFC. Maybe not as good as the Chiefs at that point in the season. But this is the same thing once again from the Seahawks, from Russell Wilson. Like, at what point do we get off this bandwagon and, you know, learn that this is just a repeat offender of being a pretender?
Well, the thing is, it's hard to get off of the Russell Wilson, Pete Carroll bandwagon, because I'm pretty sure Russell Wilson's never lost less than 10 or never won less than 10 games since being a starter. And just his ability to win and Pete Carroll and his ability to win one score games and always be able to pull out some magic at the end of the game is going to keep them in playoff contention. I mean, if anything, I would, you know, I'm not going to be as excited to take them to win the Super Bowl. I'm not going to take them to win the Super Bowl next year. I don't think. We'll see how the offseason plays out. I have a lot less hope for their, I guess, playoff futures. But you can definitely make an argument always on the over for their team season win total and to win the division. We'll see how it looks this year, you know, with the line or with the Rams getting Matt Stafford. And how healthy the 49ers are entering next season. I'm not huge in the Cardinals. I would take the Seahawks almost over the Cardinals, almost regardless of what the Cardinals did in the regular season or in the offseason. But I mean, we could easily see the Seahawks be the third best team in that division. But can you really bet on them to have a losing record or even at 500?
No. I definitely a 500 team, probably a 10-win team, but yeah, I don't know, whatever. They're certainly going to quit overreacting to them off a hot start because we see that each and every year. And you know, you just know at this point that's going to fade and they're never as good as they look in the first half of the season.
Then our NFC wild cards, I had the Falcons +225. Loser, you had the Bucks -2. We both had the Bucks -223. Both cashed that one. I had the Niners at -358. Loser, Cardinal. You had the Cardinals at +260, which is a loser. And then you had Saints -400, which brings us back to the other question that we just had in the AFC with, or the AFC with the Ravens. Do you cash that ticket I have to look at the fine print. Do you cash that ticket for the Saints winning the division? I feel like you have to, right? There's no way those odds could be minus 400 for just a one, like a two-way line like that.
Right, yeah. Minus 400 is pretty expensive to be specific to a wild card seed. Yeah.
Right. So I'm giving you that one. Whatever. Now let's move on to the award stuff. Did you know that they crown the award winners the Saturday before the Super Bowl every year?
It always seems to sneak. It's like, for how much the NFL hypes stupid things like the Pro Bowl every year, the awards just like seem to come and go like with zero heads up or anything. I don't know. Maybe some people will get noticed. I do not receive those on any email chain I'm a part of. There we go. Yeah. Not the pomp and circumstance the NFL likes to throw out for almost everything else.
Well, apparently, and my brother told me this, he's a sports media professional himself, but it was the 10th annual NFL Honors Award Ceremony. They held it at SoFi Stadium in Los Angeles. I don't know why, because no one was there. I guess it was just a telecast. Steve Harvey hosted for the third consecutive year, and it's done every Saturday or every Saturday before the Super Bowl for 10 years running. News to me, but I'll remember that moving forward, because I was wondering when we could start to audit or do kangaroo court on our futures and our awards picks. But now we have an answer after the Super Bowl. So we'll go with the top one, the MVP, which Aaron Rodgers won. His preseason odds were plus 1,600. He was the fifth highest favorite on the board. Mahomes was first at plus 325. Both Lamar Jackson and Russell Wilson were tied for third at plus 500. And then Drew Brees was plus 1,400. Tom Brady, who really never made a run at the award, but had a great season, was plus 2,000. You play futures a little heavier than me. You didn't have Aaron Rodgers anywhere?
No, regrettably. And, you know, that number sitting right there staring in the face before the season. No. I guess the thing with Rodgers is his number had been climbing up year over year and just wasn't really coming anywhere close to it. All of a sudden you get a big number like that and everyone's just tired of losing tickets and they just straight up overlook it. Big mistake.
Yeah, I mean, Patrick Mahomes having all the momentum, especially coming off the Super Bowl. Then you had all the conversation about Russell Wilson never getting an MVP vote, which is still the case this year. And, you know, Tom Brady, who I guess, you know, you can't really bring him up per se because he was listed below Aaron Rodgers plus 2,000. But Drew Brees and the Saints were the favorites, I think, to win the NFC coming into the season. So him being ahead of Aaron Rodgers makes sense. And there was questions about Aaron Rodgers' future with the Packers and how everything fit after they made the first-round pick with quarterback Jordan Love. Truth be told, looking at it in hindsight, that's probably exactly what got him the MVP. Or not exactly, but that was the main motivation. And what happened, the reasoning or the rationale behind the Aaron Rodgers revenge season.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, having a good supporting cast on offense, you know, we knew Devontae Adams was good. We knew Aaron Jones was good. You know, we got a couple big games from A.J. Dillon and, you know, a fantastic season from Robert Tonyan and Marquez Valdez-Scantling did a lot of good things this year. Big plays helped them win a couple of games on his own. A big miss there. Sad to see that number come and go. Something we can apply to future years is anytime you have a player with the pedigree of an Aaron Rodgers, regardless of what they've done the last 3 or 4 years, their number gets up to that point and the team is good, then go for it.
Yep, and everyone laugh at us. My MVP was Russell Wilson, plus 600, looking good for a few games there, but then, again, like every other year, didn't even get an MVP vote. You parlayed your MVP pick with your Super Bowl future. Essentially, you didn't parlay it, but like mentally, you know, you did with taking Matt Ryan at plus 4,000. Don't need to belabor the point there. You know, you did wrong. I know what I did wrong. On to the next award. Kevin Stefanski won Coach of the Year for the Cleveland Browns. Let me pull up the Coach of the Year stats, or excuse me, odds.
He was fourth at plus 1,400.
Man, that's pretty sharp by BetMGM, I mean, to have him as high as fourth.
Yep. Yeah, I was surprised. I thought that number was going to be a lot bigger and he was going to be a lot further down the list when I saw that today. And yeah, good on BetMGM.
Our coaches of the year, Bill Belichick. Oh, that was mine, plus 1,000. You have Doug Peterson at plus 2,800. Holy smokes, that couldn't have went any opposite, huh?
Yeah. Yep, that was a bad pick.
You and your value. Always chasing the value.
Chasing value, you know. Hey, you were an Eagles guy.
That's
right. You thought there was a chance. You can't totally put this on me.
You know how much money I lost in the Eagles this year? You're absolutely right, Eston.
Probably in the neighborhood of what I lost in the Falcons.
The next award, the Offensive Player of the Year, went to 2,000-yard rusher Derrick Henry. No one had that. You had Miles Sanders at plus 10,000, again with the value. I also took a similar value pick with Matthew Stafford at plus 7,500. I more or less parlayed that thinking with the Lions to win the NFC North. Both big whiffs by us. Defensive Player of the Year, I was close with TJ Watt at plus 1,600. You took Stephon Gilmore, the same odds. And it went to the reigning defensive GOAT, Aaron Donald, picked up his second straight Defensive Player of the Year. No surprise there. He was the odds-on favorite, too.
Mm-hmm.
Offensive Player of the Year. I don't have the preseason odds in front of me. They were a little tough to track down. But the Offensive Player of the Year, excuse me.
Derrick Henry, plus 1,000. He was second to Mahomes.
Great. Thank you. Offensive Rookie of the Year now. I took Joe Burrow, the chalk, at plus 240. You took Antonio Gibson at plus 1,400, both of which have bright futures. Both were integral parts of their team when they were active. Both were losers. Justin Herbert had probably the best rookie season a quarterback has ever had. Won that pretty convincingly. There's a very, very good chance he was going to win that even if Joe Burrow stayed healthy. So that was just the right side. Justin Herbert.
Yeah, looking back at my Antonio Gibson pick, plus 1,400. You know, I have to feel good about that. He had a fantastic season, and you know he was in contention. Obviously, you know Justin Herbert, he was ninth by the odds at plus 1,700 before the season. That's because he was expected to be a backup for the entire year. You know, Chargers went in with Tyrod Taylor, expecting him to play, you know, at least close to 16 games. All of a sudden, he goes down to a, you know, botched injection.
Medical malfeasance.
Justin Herbert has the road cleared for him for, like you said, one of the best rookie quarterback seasons we've seen.
We both went chalk with Defensive Rookie of the Year, taking Chase Young, defensive end at a Washington football team. That was an easy winner. I don't even know if there was a finalist or a ballot. It was just Chase Young, and that was pretty much the end of the conversation.
Yeah, and I think in that preseason extravaganza you mentioned, kind of our logic was most hyped defensive rookie. Nobody knows a whole lot about anybody else. Just go with that. So getting plus money on a guy with Chase Young's name value at the start of the season turns out to be a great value. And that's something that you can carry forward to this draft, the next draft, whatever. Anytime there's a defensive player coming in that much height, going that high in the draft, if you can even double up your money, it's a good bet.
Yeah, looking at the Defensive Rookie of the Year odds that our colleague Marcus Mosher did a post of, he listed 10 names. Chase Young, I guess when we did the podcast, it is 220 on our sheet and in these odds here. Second favorite was Isaiah Simmons at plus 550, then Patrick Queen at plus 1,100. Kenneth Murray. I can go on throughout the names, but none of them had a chance. none of them had a chance. What a hell of a year out of Chase Young. And I thought he was the best player coming in out of the draft. So he was awesome. Comeback player of the year was another whiff for both of us. It turned out to be Alex Smith. I'll look at his preseason odds right now. This is more of a consensus. This isn't from BetMGM per se. Alex Smith was plus 1,200 to win comeback player of the year. I got Cam Newton at plus 450. You got Bradley Chubb at plus 5,000. You were probably closer than me. Cam Newton was terrible this year.
The Alex Smith one, you know, that's one you're happy to be wrong about, right? Like, he came back, you know, 1,500 yards, 6 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, went 5-1 with Washington, but, you know, didn't have a fantastic season as the quarterback there, fantastic half season as the quarterback there. But, you know, you factor in what he was coming back from, and just the storyline was enough to push him back past guys like Newton, Bradley Chubb, Ben Roethlisberger, Gronk. Like, yeah, Alex Smith is just a great story.
Yeah, he's probably going to, unless they draft a quarterback in Washington or land someone in free agency, I can see him being their starter next year as well. And it is a great story. So shout out to Alex Smith. That was our little NFL 2020 Futures and Awards Kangaroo Court. Obviously, is any gambling or handicapping opportunities at the NFL or to surface in the offseason, maybe in the NFL draft. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about market movement and futures, but that puts a bow on our 2020 NFL season. Again, Eston beat me in our weekly head-to-head NFL pick'em, where we take our best bets or go head up and our best bets are our likes. He beat me by one game this year, so shout out to Eston. I owe you some pizzas or however we're going to settle this bet, but we'll talk about that off air. Do you want to get over to Scope and Futures?
Yeah, let's play some new bets and recover from 2020.
This is the Bet Slippin' Podcast, Scope and Futures.
All right, so right now I want to focus, my two futures are in the the NBA. And the first one I'm looking at here is the NBA MVP. Right now, I like Joel Embiid. He's plus 450. He's technically the third favorite on the board. Generally, the MVP comes from a top three seed in one of the conferences, and 76ers are currently the one seed in the East. Embiid has the highest net rating, has the highest free throw rate, out of the six top candidates. He has the highest win shares per 48 minutes and the highest PER in the entire NBA. He's ninth in on-off-court rating, and the only MVP candidate that's ahead of him is Kawhi Leonard. He's absolutely manhandling people. I don't know how much Joel Embiid or 76ers that you've seen this year, but holy God, is he playing exactly how I hoped he would under Doc Rivers? Have you noticed any of the Philadelphia 76ers?
I haven't watched a whole lot, but just been following the season as a whole and, you know, just kind of the talk around them. And yeah, you know, they're great, and they've really turned that corner. And our preseason NBA show, I think we were both on Doc Rivers as a strong value pick as coach of the year in the NBA. And, you know, he's obviously living up to that. Has the 76ers team looking like the team they were supposed to be these last 3 years and just weren't?
Yeah, so I in Stathead, which is a sportsreference.com, like, premium or subscription website, it's only like $8 a month, but since I bet so much on the NBA, I figure it's worth it. I put in these six names, which are all favorites to an NBA award, NBA MVP. I have LeBron James, Nikola Jokic, Joel Embiid, Luka Doncic, Steph Curry.
What is Luka Doncic doing on here? Like, the Mavs stink.
Yeah, I don't know.
I get he has the stats, but the team's bad. And we're approaching the halfway point of a shortened season. Like, we know they're bad.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, we're at least 30% through the season, and I'm actually going to talk about the Mavs and my going to the window NBA pick. Spoiler, I'm going to fade them, but yeah, it's Luka is still like he's a very popular player. So, you know, I guess BetMGM is trying to capitalize or take advantage of that popularity, which makes sense. That's what we expect bookmakers and the house to do. But I think, yeah, it's essentially lighting money on fire. What do you got for the NHL? Don't you have something?
Yeah, I just have a couple updated Stanley Cup picks here and have some line movement from BetMGM as well. The Colorado Avalanche, they opened at plus 1,100 as at least one of the top three teams. They were the favorite in some spots. They were at BetMGM as well, at least before the season. Now they're plus 700, so that's come down quite a bit. They're 7-3-1, second in Corsi 4 percentage, and, you know, just doing what everyone thought they do. They're, you know, pacing the West Division, or second in the West Division, and, you know, they have the offense. They missed the last couple games, had some postponed here because of COVID issues with opponents, the Minnesota Wild being one of them. So, you know, they're going to play a tighter schedule through the home stretch here. Montreal Canadiens, one of the biggest movers, the biggest mover, actually. They opened at plus 5,000. They're now plus 1,100. That's because they're 8-3-2, second in the All-Canadian North Division, and they're fourth in the NHL in Corsi 4 percentage. The Boston Bruins, they opened at plus 1,400. They're now plus 1,100 at 9-1-2, third in Corsi 4. And, you know, Tuukka Rask hasn't played his best hockey yet, hasn't played his average hockey yet. That team's scoring goals. The defense lost a couple big names this offseason in Torrey Krug and Zdeno Chara, showing no ill effects of that. And, you know, Tuukka Rask is better than any defense core you could really have when he's on. So I like some value there on Boston, still at plus 1,100. The Tampa Bay Lightning, they're plus 800. Really no movement there for the defending champs. Nikita Kucherov's been gone all season, will be gone the rest of the regular season. You know, it's tough to tell because everyone else on that Tampa Bay team is scoring goals. Tampa Bay is 9-1-1. They're 8th in the NHL in Corsi 4. And one long shot pick, the Florida Panthers at plus 4,000. They're 7-1-2. They've had a lot of COVID scheduling issues as well with opponents, not themselves. They're still 10th in Corsi 4 percentage, so it's continuing to do what they did last year under head coach Joel Quenneville. You know, Sergei Bobrovsky has always been the X-factor, always will be the X-factor. You never really know what you're going to get any night, but he's coming off a really strong start. He's looking to start to seem like at least a reliable number one option, if not a former Vezina Trophy winner. Plus 4,000 for the Panthers. I like the value there. The only concern with placing a futures wager on the Florida Panthers, you almost have to wait until after the trade deadline because you never know when this team, when this ownership is going to decide to be a seller. And, you know, number one center Alexander Barkov's name has already been out there in trade rumors for whatever silly reason. So that's what's going to be tough to bet on them there. In the playoff picture, right at the top of the Central Division, plus 4,000 seems like great value, but hey, they could turn around and trade their best player and blindside you and self-sabotage themselves at any given moment. So please wait until after the NHL trade deadline for a Panthers bet.
In terms of NHL, like regular season stuff, have you noticed like any trends or any differences based on like division realignment or the COVID altered circumstances?
Yeah, with these 2-3-game sets you're getting between teams because of the COVID scheduling and just trying to limit travel. So you're seeing teams play each other 8-10 times a year, and a lot of those are back-to-backs or even 3-game sets, like I said. So now more than ever, you really need to do watch the games. And yeah, you can look up all these numbers before. Hockey, really more than any other stat or any other league, numbers get skewed so horribly by games where one team gets off to an early lead and then the other team dominates puck possession the rest of the game. they finished the game with, you know, even the better possession numbers. So it really just throws stuff off. You really need to be watching this year and know when to throw stuff out. And that's a good way to get value. One good example here, we're recording Thursday night. Wednesday night, the Montreal Canadiens and Toronto Maple Leafs played Wednesday. The Maple Leafs were underdogs, even money plus 105 through most of the day. That was based off of a game one where, you know, they won in overtime. It was a 5-4, I think, in the season opener. And, you know, that was one of the worst hockey games I've ever seen in my life. It was just filled with sloppy play, horrible defense, horrible giveaways, bad goaltending, even though the goalies didn't really have a chance. So, you know, that was the game where you just had to ignore that one completely. And Toronto, you know, as good as Montreal has been this year, skyrocketing up these boards, Toronto's the more talented team, the better team. So getting them at even money, plus money, in a rematch was good value.
Awesome. Good stuff there. And I have one more NBA future here. I'm going to the Southwest Division. And I'm taking, right now, they are the fourth favorite to come out of the Southwest Division in the NBA. And that's the Memphis Grizzlies at plus 600. Currently, they're a game and a half back, despite having several of COVID-19 postponements, absences, and just other injury issues. They're getting healthier, and despite that, they're still feisty and winning games. They beat the brakes off of the Hornets last night, and the Hornets have been rolling going into that game. They're going to get back, including several players, but they're going to get back power forward Jaren Jackson here soon, and I'm particularly excited to see his return because he looked amazing in the bubble before his knee injury. He was averaging 25.3 points in just his three appearances in the bubble, but you know, he brings a lot to the table in terms of being able to stretch the defense out as a small ball four or a stretch four. He also brings size and length, so be able to help with their interior defense. And the only other Southwest Division team with a winning against the spread record behind the current leader, which is the San Antonio Spurs, who just are too limited offensively for me to back. And I think they're, for the long-term, a fade team. I definitely like them in certain situations. And also, Memphis is the only Southwest Division team with a positive net rating. And their style is very transferable across like different types of games and different styles of teams they could meet. For instance, they're second they're highly ranked in miscellaneous stats on NBA.com stats. Now, what is that? Stuff like points in the paint, fast break points, second chance points, points off of turnovers, stuff that's usually attributed to hustling or just like high effort, high intensity plays. So, or high intensity basketball. So, they're second in points in the paint per game. They're fourth in fast break points per game, second in second chance points per game, and second in points off of turnovers. They're just a highly aggressive, active team, a bunch of young whippersnappers, and if they get healthy, I think they can make a run at it because I don't really like that many other teams in this division. I don't like anyone in this division over them. I think the Mavericks at plus 115, they're currently the favorite to win the Southwest Division. That is all pricing from last year. There's really nothing they've done this year that explains that number. Pelicans have looked good recently, but their defense is still an issue. They really need Lonzo Ball to play out of his ass or to stretch the defense with three-point shooting. He's been knocking down the three a lot lately, which has contributed to recent success, but they're still not that good of a team. Grizzlies, fourth at plus 600, we're taking them. Rockets are plus 750. I love the Rockets, but they're without Christian Wood, who's by far their best player. It was probably they were above 500 before he was injured 3 games ago. They lost all 3 games. There was always going to be a little regression as there was a new coach and a new team, but it's the regression is going to probably be even furthered or more steep now that Christian Wood's out for a couple weeks. So I like the Memphis Grizzlies plus 600 to win the Southwest Division. Do you have any other scope and futures?
No, that's good for me. I'll save a couple Super Bowl 56 picks for going to Linda.
Okay, cool. Well, that's where we are now here, going to the window.
The Bet Slippin' Podcast. Going to the window.
The first two bets in my bet slip are the ones that we already discussed. I like Joel Embiid plus 450 to win the NBA MVP. And I also like the Memphis Grizzlies plus 600 to win the Southwest Division. What are some of the stuff you got on your bet slip?
Yes, so we recapped Super Bowl 55 and the 2020 NFL season. We don't have a whole lot out there for the 2021 NFL season, but we do have Super Bowl 56 picks and odds. You know, Kansas City Chiefs plus 550 as the favorite. You know, we kind of talked all through the season about, you know, how you just got to latch onto them early, because a strong start like they had last year and a strong season, that number's only going to go down. So plus 550 is good enough for me for a small bet. Buffalo Bills plus 1,200. We talked about them late in the year as well and how they're going to have consistency with the coaching staff. And, you know, with Brian Daboll back there, Sean McDermott, obviously, and, you know, Josh Allen just, you know, hopefully going to continue this great trajectory he's now on. Plus 1,200 is good value there for an AFC runner-up. And then in the NFC, the LA Rams plus 1,200 with Matthew Stafford. If that offensive line can stay mostly intact, that'll be one of the best offensive lines he's ever had, and boy, does he need it. Cam Akers, a real good running back there as well, and the defense, we know what they can do. And the New York Giants, I'm going to steal a pick from Jeff here, steal his thunder. Well, no, not his pick. He didn't have it. I brought him up, actually. He's probably too scared to bet this, in fairness. And maybe he's right. New York Giants plus 6,500. Daniel Jones, you know, he wasn't the problem last year. Saquon Barkley coming back from injury. And they do have weapons at receiver. Maybe they can go out, find another, whether that be in the draft or free agency, and, you know, get an offensive line, you know, add another couple pieces to the defense. Plus 6,500 is good value. Hey, they can at least win the NFC East, because apparently literally anyone can win it.
And like I teased earlier in this episode, I have an NBA gamer that I can give you guys, or that I like. 7:30 this Sunday on ESPN, we get the Portland Trailblazers versus the Dallas Mavericks. No lines are listed right now. I'm expecting the Trailblazers to get 5 points. I'll play it up to Trailblazers plus 2, barring injuries. I don't see the Trailblazers at all. I don't see any chance that they're favorites, but looking at it right now, I'm expecting to be somewhere in the 5 to 3.5 range. Dallas is, for me, is a fade team, at least at the moment. Their offense just takes terrible shots, and the defense is stuck in mud all the time. Dame Lillard has just destroyed Luka Doncic in their head-to-heads. Dame's last two games against the Dallas Mavericks, which were last season, Dame scored 61 points and 47. In those two games, he outscored Luka Doncic 108-52. Dame Lillard has shot over 50% from the field in 5 straight Mavericks games and have scored at least 30 in 7 of his last 8 games. He's carrying the Portland Trailblazers recently because CJ McCollum isn't in the lineup. But Gary Trent is a fine replacement, and for as bad as Dallas's defense is, Gary Trent is could also have a big game along with Dame Lillard, and all these guys should be getting wide open shots, because everyone's getting wide open shots at the against the Dallas Mavericks. I mean, both teams are terrible defensively. Duh, that's no secret to you guys, I'm sure. But according to CleaningTheGlass.com, Portland is 6-1 versus bottom 10 teams in defensive efficiency with a plus 5.3 against the spread margin, and they're third in net efficiency against, again, bottom 10 teams in defensive efficiency. Dallas, on the other hand, is 2-2 in such games with the 25th ranked net efficiency and a minus 8.4 ATS margin, which is 29th in the NBA, second to last. Again, my caveats are if Portland somehow becomes a favorite because of injuries, or if Dame Lillard takes a rest day, which by league rules he's not allowed to because it's a national televised game, so it's not even rest, so it would have to be injury. But give me Portland. I'm going to sprinkle a little bit on the money line because that's my long-term NBA betting strategy, but I definitely implore you to take the points, especially if you're getting four and a half, five. We good to go?
I like it. Yeah.
All right. Well, that wraps up this week's Bet Slippin' Podcast. Look out for our future episodes to hit your feed Tuesday p.m. We're going to be talking some NBA, some college basketball, some NHL, some golf. We're going to keep this show going as often as we can until the next NFL season. For Eston McLaren, it's Jeff Clark. Best of luck this weekend. Take care. We'll talk to you next week.
You've been listening to the Bet Slippin' Podcast with Jeff Clark and Eston McLaren from USA Today Sportsbook Wire.
Listen and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform.